might call this, among other things, one of the dirty little secrets of perhaps the Christian family, the Christian congregation, the individual Christian's life. We're going to be talking about Christians and mental illness during this half hour of Issues, Etc. here in the second hour of the program. I refer to it as a dirty little secret. Why? Because we're ashamed sometimes to admit that this is a reality in the Christian family, the Christian life. And it's sad to say, I think probably more often than not, where the impact is felt most strongly, even when the family is willing to face this, and the individual is willing to face this, the Christian congregation acts as though mental illness doesn't occur in our midst. We're going to talk about Christians and mental illness here in this first 25 minutes of the second hour of Issues, Etc. Brian Gadawa will be our guest in the second 25 minutes. We'll do a little fall movie review. In the third hour, we're going to turn to matters pertaining to the election. Jan LaRue of Concerned Women for America will be our guest in the first part of the third hour. We're going to talk about the makeup of the new U.S. Senate, judicial appointments, the state ballot initiatives on life issues and gay marriage, and the general direction that this November election has brought to our country. Then, in the last part of the program, Kristen Day of Democrats for Life. We'll get a pro-life Democrat's perspective on yesterday's election. And then we have open lines for your questions and your comments. Just about 10, 15 minutes there at the end for your reaction as well. The last 15 minutes of open lines is the only remaining time of open lines, live open lines, during this week of Issues, Etc. Linda Preuss is our guest. She's a frequent guest here on Issues, Etc. and member of NAMI. It's the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Linda, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Linda, Christians don't suffer from mental illness, do they?
I think maybe Christians would like to think that, because some Christians think that they can have obedience good enough for God that those terrible things won't enter in their life. But the truth of the matter is that what research is showing more and more is that serious mental illness is a dysfunction either in the neurotransmitters or the structure of the brain. So these illnesses tend to be like diabetes.
So we're talking about genuine illnesses, things that have physiological causes.
That's correct. Yes, we are. And that is the thing about the brain is that when there is damage in the brain, it does affect our behavior, and this is what makes it somewhat confusing. But over and over again, they now have, like the PET scan, can look into the brain of a person who happens to be hallucinating and seeing all kinds of things, and they can see that the brain is lighting up with activity. And so this kind of research is, and also, you know, new effective medicines are really helping the people who have these kinds of illnesses. It's helping them get their behavior under control and helping them to lead more normal lives.
Why is there hesitancy, both among individual Christians, Christian families, and congregations, to recognize the reality of mental illness?
Well, I think we've come out of a century of the type of thought that if there was something wrong, it was the way you were brought up. There was always this debate of, is it genetics or is it the way you're brought up? And what I have experienced over and over again is that an illness of this type can throw a family into complete dysfunction, because you really are not dealing with a person who's rational. They are not experiencing reality in the same way that the majority of people do. So it can make it very difficult to communicate with them. And better communication techniques definitely do help. The major one being respect for people. What I have found in traveling with my husband is that when he announces that I do this and am a volunteer for the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, generally about 15% of the people who are at the conference will come and talk to me about serious illnesses like schizophrenia or bipolar, OCD, that's obsessive compulsive disorder, panic anxiety, disorder, and then major depression, too. And these people are, you know, good, faithful people who generally have just come out to hear my husband speak on theology. So you can imagine, you know, the number of unchurched people or delinquent members that we have that are suffering silently with these situations.
You know, I've wondered about this, Linda, because when we talk about mental illnesses, as it says, so many of them are genuine physiological brain disorders. If the church handled, say, senility or Alzheimer's the way that it apparently handles or fails to handle mental illness, that would be a tremendous scandal, because that's something that comes to almost everyone if they live long enough. We wouldn't be seeing people in nursing homes, for heaven's sakes.
Right. Yes. I mean, the church has a long way to go. And I am not blaming anyone. For me, I was ignorant of this until about 6 years ago. And, you know, then I had the misfortune of finding out that there was indeed a genetic background in my side of the family with schizophrenia and bipolar, and that was turning up in some of our children. But the life of these people have been dramatically changed by what we have learned in NAMI. And instead of homelessness, there's opportunities for work, there's healthy relationships within families, and it's just, I mean, I can't help but speak to people about this, because I have seen the results to be so life-changing.
And to the person who says, look, I've been taught in my church that while this stuff may exist, it represents at best a spiritual deficit in a person, and perhaps even at worst, some sort of spiritual possession, that we're dealing here with people who are under the throes and the power of the devil.
Oh, well, I know for a fact that these people very often are struggling very much with their faith. And, I mean, this can cause a faith crisis, because we do wonder, where is God in all of this? And, but as Lutherans, we understand that we are sinner saint, and we walk by faith, not by sight. We don't have the same idea. I think it's kind of a simplistic idea that somehow God, tells you, whispers in your ear exactly what you should do and how you should live your life. We walk forward by faith as sinner saints struggling with some issues. And I think there's a tendency to somehow identify Christianity with people who don't smoke, don't drink, and are good, healthy athletes. Because, you know, they take such good care of themselves. But Jesus is the Savior of the sick and the needy. And I think that we should not forget that this is really an outreach to people who may be, you know, getting choked off by the cares and worries of life, but now we know how to save people's lives who are choking. And in the same way, God is revealing that there is tremendous medical help out there for people with serious mental illness. We just need to get people to recognize it a little bit more and to feel better about coming forward and admitting to the fact that they do indeed need some help.
I can imagine that in a family where mental illness has reared its head, and sometimes parents are not aware of this until their children reach adolescence or late adolescence.
That's
when some
correct.
Of these things set in. It's a complex of fears that might grip a parent who first think, what's wrong? Am I to blame? And then, what will other people think? And then, I think finally, maybe, have I waited too late? Have we gone past the point of no return? From outside looking in, have I seen it as a pretty accurate picture here?
Yes, that's correct. It really does need somebody, I think, at times outside, who is maybe able to say to a person, you know, this behavior is outside normal behavior, and we are recommending that you go to a psychiatrist. Now, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor, because it's very important to get a complete physical and rule out other causes. Like sometimes major depression can actually be a thyroid problem. So it really is important to see a medical doctor and have a complete physical. And then I think, you know, counseling can help as a person reevaluates their life and goes forward from there.
Is it merely for the individual in terms of, as a parent with that deals with mental illness in the family, does it involve the whole family, not only in terms of the consequences of the problem, but also the scope of the solution?
Yes, absolutely. That's what the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill is so good at, and that is educating families. They have a family-to-family class that people can take It's 12 weeks, 2.5 hours, and it teaches you all about the latest in the research on the brain, teaches you about the symptoms, about the medications, better communication techniques. It just makes you all around better prepared to cope with these particular disorders. And then they also have a class called peer-to-peer in which people who have these illnesses can go and learn about their own illness from people who also have been through it.
What about in the life of a Christian congregation where not only mental illness, but sad to say on a Sunday morning, just about every flaw, just about every problem in our lives are papered over with kind of our plastic smiles that we show one another. What can the Christian congregation do?
Well, what we are hoping to do actually is educate pastors and congregations more about the symptoms of serious mental illness and the dysfunction that does occur in the family, and try to give them some suggestions, even just for dealing in kindness with people and not so judgmental. Ours, you know, the church should be a place where needy people come to hear the forgiveness and the love of their Savior, not for, you know, people who can proudly stand there and say that they know all their gifts and talents and have their mission statement going and life is going fine. And, I know there are people that are in that situation, and that's wonderful. But I hope that they can remember that Jesus did come for the sick and for those who are not in that situation.
We're talking with Linda Preuss. She's a board member of NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, during this half hour of Issues, Etc. If you have a question or comment on mental illness, you can call now, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. As always, when we discuss topics like this that are of a sensitive nature, feel free to call in anonymously and we will honor your request. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do pastors need to know? Most of all?
Well, I think that they need to recognize, you know, abnormal behavior, which is many times it can be treated with alcohol or street drugs. And I think it would be wonderful if they could be gatekeepers into good medical treatment. These things are really beyond their abilities to deal with. A person who might be in a psychotic state is not going to benefit from any kind of counseling. And so if they are able to refer people and encourage them to get the medical treatment and refer them to NAMI, there are many local affiliates throughout the country. This can be just life-changing for the family. And in the end, then the pastor can really take care of the spiritual care. So part of what we're hoping to do is make them gatekeepers, you know, where they point the way to good care.
Does it help for the pastor if he were to, as prudence dictates, talk openly with his congregation, not about particular cases, but about the fact that this is something that Christians experience, and this is something that we deal with in our congregation as a spiritual family?
Right. Yes, I do. I think it would be very helpful. I mean, it's, you know, yes, there are confidentiality issues because of the stigma involved. It's a little distressing to me to never hear a prayer. We have for people who are in psychiatric units. And as we wrestle with what is the best way to do this, I realize that's a prayer that, you know, should be in even just the general prayers, not just praying for people mentally, but praying for all those who are in psychiatric units, which are more than cancer. I mean, it's a huge number of people.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk to this caller in St. Louis who'd like to talk about caregivers and depression. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, I have a question. I was wanting to know if it's fairly common or if it's seen somewhat for caregivers who are caring for a family member, a close family member who has disabilities, and the care is often sometimes, you know, just takes more out of the person than the person can. And the person needs more than the major caregiver can ever give. Is it very common for the caregiver to experience depression, knowing that it's going to be long-term and something that isn't going to change for 20
yes.
or 30 years.
That
right.
is an excellent question. Thank you.
Yes, that is very common. In fact, I mean, I'll go a step further. Not only is it common to sink into depression, but you can also at times be brought to a point where your own physical health, you know, starts to fail as well. So both mentally and physically, the stress of those situations can wear on people who would otherwise be considered well.
Now, this strikes me as a place where the congregation can step in and offer day-to-day practical kind of help to a person, to help them, you know, keep their head above water when they're caring for someone, either someone who has mental illness or when they're caring for someone who needs constant care, and it is, and it's bringing on depression in their own life.
I think for me, a very important turning point in my life occurred when I realized that I couldn't go on doing what I was doing anymore, and I had to look for other sources of help. And that's, I mean, we have very good health care in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for our pastors and teachers through Value Options. They can actually be quite helpful to people in getting them, giving them some advice on what they need to do. In this case, it was going to an emergency room in a hospital. And I was at the point I didn't care who blamed me. I knew I needed an outside source of help, and I am very thankful that the people at the hospital pointed me to the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill.
Another listener is calling from St. Louis as well. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, my question is, what can you do about a family member who you can't tell them that they have a problem, they refuse to acknowledge it, and when you offer to take them to a Christian counselor, they refuse it and say they're through with Christianity and
right.
and that you're just a hypocrite. And I've talked to mental places here in St. Louis, and they say unless the person is a danger to others or to themselves, there's nothing you can do to force them to go for help.
Very,
right.
very common story.
I would say one thing is always, always stay calm. And always try to understand where the person is coming from. I mean, a lot of times a person with a mental illness has grandiose ideas of what they are capable of and what reality is, and it doesn't help for you to argue with them or just tell them they're sick, especially in kind of a nasty way. And I do understand how angry, you know, some of these conversations can get. But at all costs, try to stay as calm as possible, and in better times, explain what you've heard about a dysfunction in the brain that does cause people to have different realities and how much more common it's becoming known about it. I mean, there's a terrible blow to the ego if you feel like you have had this valuable, you know, mission, and then somebody says, well, no, really, you're just mentally ill. That's a terrible ego. You know, just damaging, especially, you know, when it's then a lot of fighting and arguing over it. And so the more you can treat the person with respect in a calm way and ask them questions on what they're feeling and experiencing and then come back with calm answers about, you know, the majority of the people don't do it this way or whatever. I mean, sometimes that can be helpful over the long run.
And I would simply add to Linda's excellent response there also that to remember that, especially with a family member, to remember that while you may be the father or the husband or the brother or the sister, we have a Heavenly Father who cares far more about our family members than we do and cares about their well-being as well. We can entreat this Father through Jesus Christ in prayer that not only would they help this person possibly to recover, but also help this person to see their own need for the help that they do need and to kind of break through that that block where they say, I'm not mentally ill, and they simply cannot see their own plight. Before we go here, a couple things before we go. There's a new relationship that's been formed between NAMI, the National Alliance for the Mentally Ill, and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Linda, tell us about this.
We are going into partnership together to do conferences we are trying to make people aware of what the symptoms are and that there really is tangible help, both for people and for those who suffer from a mental illness, by having full-day Saturday conferences. And we actually are hoping to do this all over the country, but the target is going to be Missouri especially. We have one coming up this Saturday, November 6th, that is going to be a little bit outside of Kansas City in Kansas in Shawnee Mission that is still open for registration if anybody would like to come this Saturday and hear more about serious mental illness. I can give you a number to call.
Why don't you give us that number?
It's 913-782-9775. And lunch is included, so they're just hoping to have an accurate count for lunch. But we encourage anybody who's in that area to please come to Faith Village in Shawnee Mission, Kansas, and hear our presentation.
And that is this coming Saturday?
Yes, November 6th.
Faith Village in Shawnee Mission, Kansas.
Yes.
And the time of the meeting?
Registration starts at 8:30. We're going to start at 9 and go till about 3.
And the number again, folks, is area code 913-782-9775. You talked before, Linda, about the image that the Christian congregation so often projects into its own midst and into the community of people who are well-healed, healthy, wealthy, and well-balanced. Contrast that in just the last few minutes here, just a minute actually, with the theology of the cross that a person, every Christian lives under, but especially those feel it keenly who are living with mental illness.
Yes, they do. And I personally believe that we are now in the times where Jesus is saying, go and get the ones on the highways, both bad and good, and bring them into the kingdom. Because like never before, he is opening up and giving clarity to people who previously have suffered terribly. And he's enabling them to live much more rewarding lives. So, you know, the suffering that is there, there is help by contacting NAMI.
Linda Preuss is a board member for NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. Linda, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
And they will be having that meeting on serious mental illness this Saturday, November the 6th, at Faith Lutheran Church in Shawnee Mission, Kansas. And the number you can call to register, they simply need to count for the lunch. Area code 913-782-9775. When we come back from this break, we're going to turn our attention to the fall movies and be joined by screenwriter Brian Gadawa from Southern California, a regular guest here on the program, but long time no speak to Brian on these issues. We'll be doing a fall movie review, a little bit of diversion before we turn in the third hour to the serious matters, of course, of yesterday and today's election and their results. We'll be talking in that third hour with two guests. We'll begin with Jan LaRue of Concerned Women for America. We'll talk about the makeup of the new U.S. Senate, judicial appointments, the state ballot initiatives that were voted on both life issues and gay marriage. And then we'll be talking with Christian Day of Democrats for Life. We'll get a pro-life Democrat's perspective on yesterday's election. And we'll round it all off with 15 minutes of open lines.
For sinners only. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Someone once spoke some of the most comforting words I have ever heard as a parent. This person said, God loves your children more than you do. Raising children can be complicated and confusing for parents. How do we raise our children rightly? How do we help our children remain faithful Christians in the grace given them by Christ in their baptism? The Issues, Etc. book of the month for November is called Faithfully Parenting Teens. This book offers godly advice and a Christ-centered, forgiveness-centered approach to parenting. You can order Faithfully Parenting Teens by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy at our Issues, Etc. website. issuesetc.org. Look under the What's New section for Faithfully Parenting Teens, our Issues, Etc. book of the month for November.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. There is no doubt how America feels about marriage. It was a clean sweep last night. Marriage amendments were on the ballot in 11 states and all passed overwhelmingly. Peter Sprigg is with the Family Research Council.
We have seen these grassroots efforts in all of these states, and we should also mention that Louisiana and Missouri already passed amendments earlier this year. It's quite clear that the American public believes by an overwhelming margin that marriage can only be the union of one man and one woman.
The news was not as good from California, where voters handily passed Prop 71, setting aside money for embryonic stem cell research. David Prentice called it an unfortunate outcome.
I think it's unfortunate for patients as well, because this has been portrayed as something that will help them. But really, it's just going to be scientific and biotech welfare for those who want to clone and destroy embryos.
The presidential election is not as clear. While President Bush appears to have garnered enough votes to be reelected, the Kerry campaign is questioning the results from Ohio. Traditional marriage played a role there, too. Tom Minnery of Focus on the Family.
People frequently talk about a politician being swept into election on the coattails of the president. I think this year will go down as an election in which the president was swept into office on the train of a wedding dress.
Republicans picked up several seats and consolidated their control of the Senate last night, prompting hopes that a pro-family agenda will have an easier time passing. But Michael Bowman of Concerned Women for America says family advocates are still bracing for stiff opposition.
We will probably see filibusters in the U.S. Supreme Court, but they will probably be less likely to fight us on the appellate level.
Meanwhile, in the House of Representatives, the body long known as the furnace that keeps pro-family issues hot, it will remain in Republican control. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Do you want more of God's grace? Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights is a Bible-believing church, faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community gathered around Christ that cares, with a vibrant historic Christian liturgy. Bethany Lutheran Church is located at 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. Visit them at www.bethanylcms.org.
It's no secret that today's postmodern culture presents a challenge for parents. That's why Issues Etc. and Concordia Publishing House are pleased to offer two books of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens and Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. Each book costs only $9.99 plus shipping and handling. The Faithfully Parenting series is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Or check it out at issuesetc.org and click the What's New section.
We just finished that serious conversation with Linda Preuss on Christians and mental illness. There are other serious considerations, even outside the circumstances of mental illness, that face parents all the time. And that's why we've chosen as our Issues Etc. book of the month for November, a book called Faithfully Parenting Teens. Now, if you don't have kids who are in their teenage years, we also are offering Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. Both of these books are $9.99 plus shipping and handling. There are Issues Etc. book of the month for November. Now, you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. You got 25 minutes left today to call 1-800-325-3040 and ask for this book, Faithfully Parenting Teens or Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers, $9.99 plus shipping and handling. That number again, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can go to our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and there you will find information on the Issues Etc. book of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens, Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. There are two locations in St. Louis, one at 3558 South Jefferson, the other here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton. If you follow the signs, you'll find the CPH bookstore, and you'll find our Issues Etc. book of the month for November, Faithfully Parenting Teens, Faithfully Parenting Preschoolers. Those two books are your choice for $9.99. Brian Godawa is our guest for the remainder of this second hour. We're going to get a little fall movie reviews. I haven't been to the theater in a long time. Well, long for me. And I'm wondering what's out there in the fall season. Brian is a regular guest. He's a screenwriter in Southern California, author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Brian, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here, Todd. Thanks.
Where do we begin with what's showing in the theaters right now?
Wow. Well,
give me your must-see if you have one right now.
I do. I have a couple of must-sees. But this has been a sort of a different season for me. I haven't watched too many of the big mainstream movies. I've been focusing more on documentaries and more independent films because I think they've been more interesting. The absolute must-see right now is Voices of Iraq, which is a documentary that just came out by these two filmmakers. They were on MTV, actually. And they sent, I think it was like 1,500 digital video cameras into Iraq and gave the people just directions on how to shoot each other with the camera. And they let the cameras go, and they passed the cameras around, and the people of Iraq basically gave their opinions about various issues related to the situation they're in right now. And it's truly astounding. It's moving. It'll make you cry. But it's beautiful because this is the one viewpoint that we haven't seen anywhere else in the media. And these are the voices of the people of Iraq and what they think about what's been going on. So it's just a really beautiful documentary that I highly recommend. Unfortunately, it's open right now. But because it's a small documentary, it's only at select theaters around the country. So if you can't find it near you, you can rent it on Netflix right now, which is on the Internet, you know. And so I highly recommend that one.
Somebody says documentary. Please, I mean, if I wanted to watch a documentary, I'd just turn on PBS.
Oh, some of the greatest stories are in documentaries, if they're good, you know. And this one is a great one because it tells the story through the people's eyes themselves, what they think. And that's what makes it so fresh and refreshing. It's sort of a maybe Iraqi reality TV, I don't know. But, so it's just a powerful, beautiful story. And I think you'll be interested. I think people will be interested. It won't be boring.
Okay, I want to turn to one that is entirely fluffy. At least it looks fluffy to me. It looks like something I'd see if I just really wanted to escape. Into the world of the movies, and I have not seen it. It's called Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow. It looked like a visually stunning thing. Is there anything to this movie?
Well, yeah, that was like one of the last big movies I saw a few weeks ago, actually, one of the actual mainstream movies. It's a popcorn action flick, but it doesn't have much heart or soul, in my opinion. I don't really recommend it. It looks beautiful. It's shot well. It's got a really interesting look of, like, the look of the future through the eyes of the 40s type of thing. So it almost looks like a comic book itself in that sense. And, you know, it's basically like Raiders of the Lost Ark, but there's nothing new or unique to it. And the characters are rather flat and unsympathetic. So I didn't find it to be very fulfilling in terms of watching a movie. And I like popcorn movies, too, but they got to have some characters that you really care about, and I didn't care too much for these guys. And the story is basically, you know, sort of a futuristic rendering of the past. So it's like, I don't know, I guess around 1940s or something, you know, World War II era, and these robots start invading America, and they're created by some evil genius that they have to stop. You know, it's a real basic popcorn-type comic book story, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, what would be, we talked about your must-see, what would be your absolutely don't waste your money, don't see this, that you have seen?
Oh, boy. Let's see. Fahrenheit 9/11.
Why so?
A terrible, terrible documentary. And I'm not going to talk about the politics of it, just from the pure standpoint of it's obviously one of the most, it's the most popular documentary in history, and it's obviously big right now still. Of course, not anymore. But anyway, it's just such terrible, terrible filmmaking, so very manipulative and lying through the editing. And again, this isn't in relation to the politics of it. This is just in relation to the filmmaking side of the movie. It's so dreadfully done in terms of dishonest editing and filmmaking that it's truly amazing that they would even call it a documentary. And it would be a tragedy if it does get some kind of Academy Award nomination, because it's not a documentary. It's propaganda, and it's bad propaganda, too. It's not even done well, so I wouldn't recommend that movie.
No, the one that just last night, my wife, we were, you know, watching television, and one of the previews played during the time of the commercial, and it was for Shall We Dance?
Yes.
Richard Gere, Susan Sarandon, I think J-Lo's in there someplace. She said, you know, I know it may not be much, but I want to go see it just to see what it's like.
I highly recommend that movie. My wife and I loved it. We cried after we saw it because it's a very beautiful movie that does affirm marriage, but not without dealing with temptation. And it's basically a guy who has a boring life, and as he writes out wills for people, and he gets entranced by this vision of this woman in a window of a dance studio, and he gets drawn to the studio, takes classes because he wants to be around her, but soon finds out that he actually loves to dance, but it's, of course, a secret because dancing for men isn't very acceptable in our society. So it deals with his struggles on that issue. And it's a very, you know, wonderful movie in many ways. It's not perfect, you know, and I've got some complaints about it, but I highly recommend it for you know, couples, and just it's a good romantic, hopeful movie.
There's another one. Now, this is an independent movie that some may not have heard about. They certainly would have heard about one of its leads. I consider him probably, when he's on screen, I can't take my eyes off of him for some reason, Christopher Walken. The movie's called Around the Bend. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's another indie movie, and it's probably not out of very many places, but what's interesting about the movie is, yeah, Christopher Walken's an excellent actor, so is Josh Lucas, and it's basically the story of four generations of fathers and sons seeking redemption. And for that sake, I think it's a very interesting movie. I partially recommend it. I found out that it was made by a Christian, actually, written and directed by a Christian, so that I'm always interested in finding out, you know, if movies will have spiritual sides to them and such. Unfortunately, this one doesn't go into that, and but it is a movie about redemption and about fathers and sons finding redemption in the relationships that have been alienated over the years, and it's very much of a character-driven story. Not a lot of it's a road trip. They go on a road trip, but its focus is on character, not as much plot. So, if you like indie movies, it's a very good dramatic indie movie.
And can Christopher Walken play something other than a gangster or a creepy guy?
Yes. He's still kind of weird in the movie, but he definitely can do other parts than just the bad guy.
Okay, here's another one with the two big names, and that is Ladder 49.
Yeah, Ladder 49 was a very interesting movie. It starred John Travolta and Joaquin Phoenix, and it's basically a slice-of-life movie about the life of a young firefighter and what that entails, you know. And it's literally slice-of-life. It's not strong on story. I recommend it, though, because you get this feeling of, even though it's not strong on story, the events that happen, of course, you know, he joins the force, you know, he's a rookie, and then it shows him going to his first fire, and then it shows him falling in love, getting married, and they're all just basic, you know, nothing unique type elements to the story, but they're still interesting enough, and when he goes into the various fires, they're very interesting scenarios. And it's got a very surprise ending to it that sort of shocked me, that made it, wow, this is not Hollywood. And it pretty much, you come out of there with a really great appreciation of, even though they don't deal at all with the Twin Towers, you know, 9/11, I really felt like I had a greater appreciation for firemen and all civil workers who did sacrifice their lives on 9/11 for the thousands of Americans, you know, and the hundreds that they saved.
I haven't seen the film. How does John Travolta pull this one off? I've seen him very uneven work in about the last decade.
Yeah, he has. I thought he did good in this role. He's actually a supporting role. Joaquin Phoenix is the lead, but as a supporting role, he's sort of like the chief of the firehouse, and you know, he's got his own past that hangs over him, but he's a voice of wisdom and a mentor, so he's a very positive, good role in there. I thought he did good.
Here's one that I heard about only via the fact that I follow the career with some kind of purient interest of T.D. Jakes. Mm-hmm. He wrote the book called Woman, Thou Art Loose. Now, laying aside his theology for just a moment, I understand that he actually appears in the film version of this book.
Yes, Woman, Thou Art Loosed is sort of a redemptive movie about a woman who's goes to jail for killing a man, and it talks about her past and how she got to where she was, and she's on death row, and she had been, you know, molested as a young girl and got into drugs and stuff like that. But you know, it's really done it's done with class. It's done very tastefully. It's not exploitative. I partially recommend the movie because I don't really fully recommend it because of the theology of T.D. Jakes. Is he's anti-Trinitarian, and I don't support that. And I don't think that's good. But in terms of story, it's probably the best Christian type movie I've seen in many, many years, in that it's unabashedly a Christian movie. This is black gospel culture. You have the crusade type, or you know, the revival situation where you go in and you see the people, you know, you hear the preacher preaching and all that, and there's a few of those scenes. There's a few too many for me, but by and large it's true to that culture. It doesn't ring with artificiality like so many other Christian movies have, you know. So I thought it dealt with these deep wounds that many women in our country experience. And they're based on T.D. Jakes' own experience in prisons with women, and I think that's why a lot of it rings true.
And at his appearance, he plays himself, I assume?
Yeah, he plays himself, and that's a very self-aggrandizing, in my opinion, because it's a fictional story, but he plays himself in it. I don't have a problem with him starring in it and being a preacher, but anyway, and there's a few too many scenes of him preaching, which gets a little boring after a while. But he did a pretty good job, actually. I was impressed.
What is this movie, I Heart Huckabees, all about?
I Heart Huckabees is another independent film. I've been seeing so many of them, you know. But it's interesting. I only partially recommend it because I like philosophy, and this is, I call it a philosophical farce. And they basically, normally philosophy or worldview is integrated subtly into films, subversively into films. But in this case, it's very outward in the open, and I really enjoy that because you hear them talking about different, you know, things like the meaning of the universe and epistemological certainty and this kind of stuff, which I found very amusing. But I most people probably wouldn't. It's a little harsh in its language, and it's, of course, not got a Christian worldview to it. It's a very monistic worldview. It's a story of a young kid who starts to see coincidences in his life, and he doesn't believe there's meaning to his life, but he starts to make him think that there's got to be meaning behind these coincidences. So he goes and he finds these existential detectives, and existential detectives are people who seek to find the meaning in your life. Get it? It's kind of clever. I like that. And it's Dustin Hoffman and Lily Tomlin, and they're just really, really amusing in these roles. And so they're seeking to find the meaning in his life while he's being attacked by the villain, who is a nihilist who believes there is no meaning in life. She's another psychiatrist, and she's trying to convince him there's no meaning in life. So, you know, it's just a clever sort of thing if you like philosophy, but it's got some harsh language in there, and I would only recommend it for those who are interested in philosophical worldviews.
We're doing a little fall movie review with Brian Gadawa. He's a screenwriter in Southern California, author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Here's one I'd like to see. The minute I get a spare moment, I might actually go see it while it's still in the theaters, The Forgotten.
Yeah, The Forgotten is a very clever thriller. It's clever. I don't really recommend it because what it ends up being in the end, I won't give the twist away, but what it ends up being in the end you know what it is, but nothing's explained behind it, and so it's got a very confusing ending. Which, of course, most thrillers are: what is it? What's going on? What's going to happen? And then at the end, you kind of realize, and it all ties together. In this movie, it doesn't tie together in the end. However, the first 3/4 of the movie is a very well done thriller, very subtle, nothing gross, nothing over the top, and it keeps you guessing. And it's weird and strange, and it's done well. But then it sort of falls apart halfway through. It's basically this woman, Julianne Moore, who starts to see things in her life, memories of her life start to get erased, like her son who died a year ago, all of a sudden he vanishes from the picture she had in the house. Her husband is no longer married to her. All these strange things start happening. She has to figure out what is it that's going on here. So, you know, yeah, like I say, it's a good first half of a movie, first 2/3 of a movie, and then it sort of falls apart and it's not interesting. But I just recently saw, just last night, I saw another thriller called Saw.
Yeah.
And that's another, I think this is a season of thrillers. There's a lot of them out there, The Grudge and stuff. I like to watch thrillers, not because I like them, but because I have high hopes for them. They can be good, but most of them are really bad. Let me give you an example. Saw is a movie about a serial killer, but he's not really a serial killer. He's a guy who captures people, puts them in situations that they have to get out of or they're going to die. And as they try to get out of the situation, you know, it's like a booby trap, you know, and can they overcome the booby trap or not? And, of course, most of the time they don't. And so we start with the movie. These two guys are in a room. We don't know who they are. They don't know who they are. And they're just shackled in a room, and they have to try to get out or, you know, somebody's going to die. And it's a very interesting, unique twist. It's well done, but unfortunately ends up being a nihilistic movie. What I mean by that is that there's no hope in the ending. There's no real redemption in the ending. The bad guy gets away, but it gets away in such a way that it's not a very good moral message. There are movies like Phone Booth or recently Collateral that I would recommend mm-hmm. that are reflective of the movie Seven, where you've got people who, this is the new form of thrillers out there now, and Saw is one of them, where they sort of try to make people who, the serial killer is sort of showing his attack on the people is a way of showing them that they're not really good people, that they've got problems in their life or whatever, or they're not as good as they think they are. And while that's a good essence of a good thriller, like Seven or Phone Booth or Collateral, it doesn't work in Saw. It doesn't happen in Saw. There's not really a true morality behind the picture, and it ends up being really sort of hopeless and nihilistic at the end. Whereas movies like Collateral, it sort of shows that the hopelessness and despair that's in the world is because we believe there's no meaning in life. And so in that sense, Collateral has a very strong moral meaning to it. You know, if Collateral is the story about Tom Cruise plays a contract killer who's in town and he needs to kill a bunch of people in one night, so he gets a taxi cab driver to drive him around, and the taxi cab driver, of course, figures out what's happening, and they have all this exchange throughout the movie. And throughout that movie, we sort of see that the city of L.A. and the city life and the life of people is sort of meaningless and alienated. And this killer is sort of the result of that meaninglessness and the despair and the alienation that we have. And it sort of forces us to realize that. And I think that can be a really good thriller and a good moral meaning to it. But the movie Saw doesn't, unfortunately, accomplish that.
Well, now, you mentioned Collateral. Next to Tom Cruise is Jamie Foxx playing the cab driver. He has got a film out that people are raving about. It's Ray. It's basically the life story of Ray Charles.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. I'm intending to see it shortly, but I haven't seen it yet.
You mentioned The Grudge too. I saw that recently, and I was kind of hopeful about it because it came from a Japanese director,
yeah.
Very sparing, but also one of those that ends. And I'm worried. I like thrillers. I like horror movies. I'll admit that. But the ones that end with this kind of no resolution, everything
yeah.
gone bad. It's kind of like, at least bring some closure to this story, strike me as not even really satisfying us at the level of the story.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. In fact, that's what I felt about the first movie, The Ring. And, of course, the Ring 2 is coming out. I thought The Ring was a very good ghost story. Ghost stories are basically metaphors for overcoming something in the past, you know, overcoming your past, finding atonement, in a sense. And The Ring was a great classical, you know, ghost story. It's like, what's going on? What is this ghost? And you realize, oh, it's she's trying to find, you know, she's trying to have the killer found out, type of thing. And but then in the last 5 minutes, it switches and it becomes a Nightmare on Elm Street ending, so that they can keep making sequels to it. And I totally agree with you. That's the problem I have with a lot of these stories. By the way, Saw was a lot like that too, and I think that's doesn't work for me. But
all right, there's one that has yet to open. I think or has just opened. It's an animated feature, The Incredibles.
Yeah, can't wait.
I mean, it looks like it's going to be marvelous. But the thing that strikes me about this, it's kind of superheroes, but it's a family.
Yes, and it's and ultimately they're going to have their problems, but ultimately it looks like it's going to be a cohesive, good thing. The family, you know, and sort of like finding the hero in each of us. You know, I mean, everyone in a family has a hero within, that type of thing. Everything Pixar does is excellent, so I'm really looking forward to that. But you didn't mention Shark Tale.
No.
And Shark Tale, I think, of course, that's been out for a while now, but I really enjoyed Shark Tale. You know, I think that there's some things I didn't like about it, but I enjoyed the idea of bringing the whole gangster genre into the ocean with sharks and the like. And I thought it, you know, I thought it was sort of a mixed bag of some good values and some subversive ones, you know. But the idea of this shark who's not like the other sharks, and he feels pressured to be mean, but he's not mean, and he's actually a vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And they sort of give some implications, some very subtle suggestions that he might even be gay. And, you know, he teams up with another little fish who is a liar, and he's lied and told people that he's a shark slayer because he killed the shark, but he really didn't. And so it's sort of their misadventures and how they face their own. The good morality is how they sort of face themselves and learn how to accept themselves in a world of differences, but also learn how to do the right thing and the like. Unfortunately, I think that it brings in the subversive underlying theme of that is very popular nowadays, which is this: we need to accept people who are different, which really means accepting homosexuals. And I think that's sort of the underlying point in the story. There's a few characters where, you know, they dress up like they look like gay people and stuff. So there's this underlying subversive thing that are in movies these days, and I was sort of disappointed to see that in Shark Tale.
You started out talking about this documentary that you had seen and said was your must-see. There's one that my daughter, just as a matter of, interest, she watched Supersize Me. She found it very entertaining. Another documentary. What's it with documentaries now in the major theaters?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. And I don't think it's just because of Fahrenheit 9/11, because all these movies were already being made. You know, I just think that there's just maybe some people are beginning to see some more value in documentaries, but unfortunately they have to be very entertaining, like Super Size Me or Fahrenheit 9/11 or even Voices of Iraq. It's very entertaining because it's very, very unique. It's not your typical PBS type thing.
I'm concerned about it just turning into reality television
yeah.
for the big screen.
Yeah, and there is that danger. I certainly wouldn't deny that. There is that danger. And unfortunately, I love PBS documentaries. I think they're great. On one level, they're great informational vehicles, although they're often obviously skewed philosophically many times. But, yeah, I think there's just people are seeing the value of it, but they are tending towards reality TV-type films, and that is a danger. But you know what? They're still going to be always going to be very, very low on the attendance mm-hmm. because the bottom line is they don't sell as much. But where they're going to make up more money is now is in rentals and like on Netflix and Blockbuster now, because of the way they're working things over the internet, and they're doing systems of recommendations where you know, if you belong to Netflix, they'll tell you if you like this movie, you like that.
Only about 10 seconds here.
Okay, and so anyway, that system now, documentaries are getting a much better viewing because they're being recommended by these various mechanisms.
Brian Godow is a screenwriter in Southern California, and he's authored this book, Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. You can also read his movie blog at Godawa.com, GODAWA.com. Brian, thanks for being our guest.
You bet. Thanks, Tom.
That's Godawa.com. When we come back, the third hour of Issues, Etc., we'll deal with the election issues, starting out with Jan LaRue. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.